The Big Book was written in 1935. Is there any thought given to updating the thing or bringing AA into the 21st century? And this was submitted by Wendell W. from Lemon Cove. Thanks for that question, Wendell. AA is modern in many respects. The Big Book, the first 164 pages of that Big Book, is never going to change, nor should it. The stories in the Big Book do change with each edition. The current edition, the fourth edition, came out in 2001. Those stories are as up-to-date as they're going to get until the next edition comes out. The tradition, the steps of the first 164 pages is never going to change, but Alcoholics Anonymous does have several modern aspects. Locally, our central office has a computer website that you can access for information about what's going on in the program locally. There are many websites, AA websites, that you can get on online around the country. You can go to online meetings on those websites. Every community usually has a young people's meeting. Visalia has a young people's meeting, which meets Saturday at 7 p.m. 6. And if you need more information, see Lindsay for that young people's meeting. So, there's a lot of modern aspects to Alcoholics Anonymous. It does change with the times. Now, Valley Group of Alcoholics Anonymous has long been known for innovations and sobriety. And we are keeping up with the times, too. So as a special feature tonight, let's give it up for the kids.
Hello, my name is Brendan. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Brendan.
I did kind of rap things and stuff like that about recovery, so I'll just basically do a short rap about recovery and a little bit about my life in it. There's a long faith path in life. I see the doors of recovery changing my mind. I see the suggestions given to me, sitting back one day at a time. She's coming up in the world with all along my mind. Taking that bottle, drinking it all the time. Now I'm working the 12 steps of recovery because I want to be manageable today. As I sit back and read the 12 or the AA book, 164 pages, and take suggestions of everybody I look. I don't understand sometimes, so I sit back with my sponsor to his. Can I give you a ring sometime? And he goes, sure enough, and then all of a sudden, here I am once again in recovery, standing tough.
First speaker has been a sober member of the fellowship for 6 years. He has held service positions continuously and still does. We were talking earlier, and he made the statement that this town has brought me to my knees. And we're going to find out why that is in just a few minutes. So now, with all the earnestness at your command, will you welcome, please, from Fresno, Robert P.
My name is Robert. I'm an alcoholic. And Bill, thanks for asking me to come down and speak. It's good to see some friendly faces where I am in the audience. And Jose, thanks for coming down with me. They stole my thunder with the 33 years, you know. And not only that, the guy came with me, and today was his 26th anniversary of being married, you know. So I know he had a couple other things to do, and I greatly appreciate that. You know, I think I have a pretty average story. I'm an average drunk. I was born in San Francisco in the early 60s. We quickly moved to a little town called Cupertino, in which I lived in for the next 18 years. I come from a broken family. Mom and Dad got divorced when I was about 8. My mom got remarried when I was about 12. Dad got married a couple of times. He was still in my life, though. You know, although they were split up, he was still in my life. And You know, I wasn't physically, sexually, emotionally abused as a child. You know, I've heard stories in the rooms, and I'm thinking they have a reason. You know, and on some days I can't think of why I'm here and what the reason was. Except when I drank, I couldn't stop drinking. You know, and that seemed to be a good enough reason. My alcohol, I started drinking when I was about 12. You know, about the same time my mom got remarried to my stepdad. And it was before a junior high dance, is what I can recall. I can recall getting some liquor from the cabinet, putting it in a mason jar, you know, going down to the local park before the dance, drinking it with some friends, and going to the dance, you know. I think at the time I was about 4'9". I weighed about 70 pounds. But I didn't feel like I was 4'9". I didn't feel like I weighed 70 pounds anymore. I don't know how tall I felt. I don't know what I weighed. But I didn't, you know, it was something different than what I was. And for a long time, what I really was trying to do was trying to change the way I felt from what I was, you know. And, you know, there was some, there were bouts of other things besides alcohol in my life. I'll just say that, okay. Weed was one of them. I started about the same time, and if you're 12 years old, it's a little easier to get than walking into a store, from what I recall. But concerning the alcohol, you know, that's, it's the way I drank. I remember drinking that night. I remember feeling good. I remember drinking some more in junior high, and I remember going into high school. I don't think I ever drank normally. I mean, even through high school, you know, we had a lot of fun in Cupertino. I don't remember it being that dull, but I remember when I drank it, it turned Cupertino into Super Cupertino. You know, it turned the lights on. You know, I don't know about you, but, you know, drinking somehow turns the lights on for me. You know, it does something that I've never found anything else that does quite what that did for me. But, you know, getting back to not drinking normally, I remember going to, in through high school, going to a lot of parties, kegger parties. You know, and I would drink too much. I would go outside. I would stick my finger down my throat. You know, I would spin for a while. Once I got to spins, then I would just get sick, and I would try to find a little patch of grass that I could lay down and cool off a little bit, and then I could go back and drink like everybody else was doing again. And looking back, I don't think that's normal. You know, I don't think that was normal drinking. I lived in one house from 0 to 18, and from 18 to 40, I lived in 22 different known locations. And so I was a runner, and I was a mover. The reason he said of Isaiah brought me to my knees, we'll get to that in a little while, but this was the town. I'm surprised that there's so many sober people in Visalia, you know? When they were introducing people and asking them to come up, I kept thinking, you're going to know somebody. Because I don't know anybody. In Fresno, I don't know anybody that I drank with. Okay? I mean, when I moved, I had to move. And this is the town I moved from. You know, Santa Fe, Froggies, I can go with a few bars around here that I like to drink at. You know, at the age of 25, I got married. I was dating a girl. She got pregnant. We got married. We had another child. And but I never really felt there was always something missing. And I don't really know how to describe that. I was always running from something. And I don't know what that is, except for myself. But I do know that I love to drink, you know, and I loved it from the get-go. And again, you know, the problem was I couldn't stop. So we had two kids. I had a real good job. Worked for an insurance company. And so what I did for the next 3 years after I got married, actually the next 5 years, is I was on the road for 3.5 out of 5 years, you know, and I was traveling all over the U.S. after major catastrophes. Which is kind of ironic because you put on the road to try to help put people's lives back together, which, you know, is a lot easier than putting your own life back together, from what I found out. And that entire time that I was gone, you know, it's being newly married. I wouldn't, you know, for me, it wasn't a good idea to be away from my new bride for for that much time, nor my children. And so on the road, you know, I could get into a lot of stories of pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization that go along with drinking, which go along for me with drinking, with being on the road, and being so misunderstood, you know, from my wife on the phone about problems we have at home with the children. And I'm just thinking, hey, get off my ass, you know, I'm busy here and I got things to do. And so eventually that marriage, the marriage came to an end, and it came to an end a lot longer after the fact that we separated from each other. What happened when I was in Georgia and I got a DUI? I've had four of them. I had one when I was 18 years old. I had one when I was 21 years old. That one I woke up on upside down on Highway 50 going eastbound towards Tahoe, right about at Folsom. I had a roll bar, so, you know, but I remember even when that occurred, you know, my biggest thing was to get out of the truck upside down and to make sure all the beer cans are off the freeway before the cops come. And I don't know why that is. But I got a DUI in Georgia, and I didn't tell my supervisors. And so what happened was 2 years later, they were doing an MVR report, and that came back. And had I been honest at the time when it occurred, I probably could have got some help. They probably would have reached up and given me some help, but I didn't. I lied one more time. I got real good at that. And they did an investigation, and they let me go. After they let me go, she moved out, like 3 months later, took the kids, and moved from Fairfield to Davis. And I remember packing the van for her, and I remember, you know, getting everything out of the house, and I remember packing it and shutting that door and sending them on their way. And I remember there was an instant, there was a great sense of relief that they're finally out of here. You know, I can now do what I want to do. And I can tell you that moment of relief was then followed by 10 years of hell. So that was about 30 at the time. And what happened is it was the beginning of a long and continuous bottoms. You know, it was one after another. I would be able to hold it together for a little while, and then it would fall apart. What I've learned in those 10 years between the age of 30 and 40 is that me and my disease and drinking is. What it took is it took longer to tear it, to build it back up, and a shorter amount of time to tear it back down. And this went on, you know, again and again and again. I've been homeless 3 times, which is not really a problem if you're homeless and you have a car, okay? I mean, as long as you have one or the other. I mean, you know, you could, with a car, I could go from house to house to house. But I've up at the Kings River, I spent a couple of nights, and I was just lost, you know. The bottom line is, you know, I was just lost, and I didn't have any solutions, you know. I had a lot of problems, and I only had a couple of solutions. And my solutions were drinking, you know. My solutions were running from responsibility. And that's what I did. I got to Visalia in about 2004. I was working up in Eureka, building some decks with my stepbrother. Actually, we were building decks for weed growers, and. You know, I got a call from somebody who said, hey, do you want to come down and you can work in Visalia, you know? And really that was the beginning of a whole new chapter again, because I thought, you know what, one more time I can put it back together again. You can do this. And so I came down to Visalia and I worked for a company. And I mean, I had everything I needed. I had, they paid for an apartment. They gave me a company car. you know, they had me all set up. They gave me a per diem. And within about 13 months, I had torn that down. And, you know, once again, I had nothing left. And so what I did is I got on a bus from Visalia. I got some other issues too. That'll come out. It had gotten so bad here that she kicked me out, right down the street is all I can tell you. I mean, driving here, I could have made a left to go to the meeting or made a right to go back to her house, okay? Glad Jose was with me. Just kidding. And so, you know, I had to walk down to Moon Boulevard and then walk down to the casino bus. Because the casino bus could take me from Visalia to Lemoore, at which time I could cut a deal with the bus driver in Lemoore, because they don't like to take you from, they only like to bring you back to where you came from. But if you know him well enough, then you can get him, you can pay him a little money, and then what he was going to do is he's going to take me to Fresno. And at that point in time, I was going to live with my sister, because I'd gotten some legal trouble in Kings County. So between Visalia and Kings County, I don't know if anybody can relate to the police up there or this town, but it brought me, it just pulverized me. I'd gotten some trouble up a little more, and so I had to go see the judge up there, and he said, you know, you can either do 3 years or you can do a program, you know. And what I said is, the DA said that you'll probably be out in like 18 months. And I said, can I get that in writing? He said, no. You know, when I was in that courthouse, I heard a DA say to somebody, and he said, because some guy was let go before I was there, you know, when I was in that room, but before I got up there. Somebody got pissed off and said something to the DA, and he said, look, don't worry about it, because one of two things is going to happen. Either the guy's going to change his life, okay, or he'll be back here. I mean, those are the two choices. And I thought, oh, these guys are pretty smart. Because I always thought I was smarter than the system. So anyways, those are my options, and I can tell you I had to think about it. You know, I really, because I didn't have anywhere else to go. And I was tired, and I was beat down, and I had almost given up. But for some reason, I called my sister who lives in Fresno and asked her if I could stay with her one more time. And I don't know that I wanted to do that at the age of 40, but I'm glad that I did, and I'm glad that she let me in her house. So I had enough wherewithal to tell the judge, to ask the judge, if I'm going to do this. And I say a program brought me here and the judge did. But I think it was something bigger than that, and I don't really, I could try to put my finger on it. But I had been requested or asked to go to programs before, and I just said, no, I don't have time. And then I ended up, you know, doing whatever I needed to do, and then eventually getting caught. But for whatever reason, I said, I'll do it, but can I do it somewhere else? I can't do it here. You know, there's no way that I can get sober or do whatever you guys are going to ask me to do, around the same people that I was around, okay? Because I knew myself well enough to know that's not going to happen. And he said yes. So he allowed me to go to Fairfield, and what that program brought me to was they made you go to Alcoholics Anonymous 3 days a week, you know? So I can tell you what it was like. It was 28 years of fun with trouble, and then just trouble. You know, what it was like was one bottom after another, and having to lose everything and not really knowing what was wrong with me. And what it was is it was, you know, alcohol. You know, losing alcohol was like losing my best friend. I mean, it got me out of a lot of scrapes. You know, it could, I loved it. You know, I love that part in I think it was chapter 7 they were reading, you know, taking a trip or not taking a trip. That describes it for me. You know, everything else is just, I was drunk if I was taking a trip, I was drunk if I wasn't taking a trip. I was drunk when I wanted to be, and I was drunk when I didn't want to be. You know, I really couldn't understand the whole thing with the allergy of the body until I got into Alcoholics Anonymous, because there's many times, you know, what I intended to set out to do as far as drinking is not what happened. You know, I may set out to have one or two, or just to stay for a little while, and once I drank, I couldn't control it. And so that's what it was like. What happened is I started going to meetings. I went to a lot of meetings my first year. I went to a lot of different meetings, and I started to identify with some of the things that people said and some of the things that people felt. You know, I started riding my bike to this morning meeting, and there I met, you know, some of the people that are my good friends now. You know, I had a shitty attitude then. I can still have one now. I remember driving up to one meeting, and, you know, they're all out there, and these guys have been sober for a while. You know, they're nice guys, you know, and I ride up on my bike and say, look at you guys with your cool sunglasses. You know, those are probably your cars in the parking lot. You know, because when I got here, I didn't have a license either. You know, I had pretty much destroyed everything I had. And, you know, Jose, who's my sponsor today, I can't really tell you the day I met him, like it was Thursday the 6th, but I can tell you it was a Wednesday. And the reason I can tell you that is because there was two meetings at this meeting on a Wednesday. There was one in the morning, and there was one in the afternoon, okay? And he said something that just pissed me off, in the morning. And what it was, he was calling me on some bullshit that I really didn't want him, you know, he was a little too quick for me. So when I got home, I went back at noon and rode my bike, and I was going to tell him off. Hey, fuck you, you know? And so I went, and he wasn't there, okay? So he's always a couple of steps ahead. So really what happened is I started listening. These guys started inviting me places, and they started to make me feel, you know, a part of. And I can tell you, from where I came from, I had not felt a part of for a long, long time. And, you know, and eventually I started listening, and I started to take suggestions that I did not yet believe in, which is one of the things that I found to be the most, the best part in Alcoholics Anonymous. I know that I'm about to embark on something when I really don't want to do it. You know, when someone's, when he's giving me a suggestion, and I'm thinking, you know, he's crazy. Okay? He must not know the whole story. All right? I might need to explain it a little bit more, because he doesn't understand. Those words I know are not very good when I hear he doesn't understand, because that's my own head. But that's the difference between, you know, what my head says and what the reality is. The first suggestion that I can remember when I say those phrases is that he, I was about a year sober, and it was before a meeting, and we were talking, and what I wanted to do at that point in time, I can tell you it was probably about March or April or May of 2006, because what I really wanted to do is I really wanted to move to Arizona, and I really wanted to be with those two boys that I wasn't there for, you know, that I hadn't been there for most of their life. I mean, I was there for them, but I wasn't there for them. You know, it was more of a superficial, not really, and so I wanted to move down to Arizona and make everything right. And he said, well, do an expectations list, Robert, you know, and find out, you know, what's going to happen if none of your expectations work out. Are you going to be able to stay sober? You know, the one thing that I know that the guy has always pointed me to, okay, is, you know, how is this going to affect your sobriety, you know, and can you stay sober before making some real life-changing decisions? And so I did an expectations list, and I can tell you that I don't even know if we had talked about it yet. And I remember him saying that night, if it's a good idea today, it'll be a good idea in 6 months, Robert, you know. And it was like 2 months later that those boys and that ex-wife came driving from Arizona up to Davis, and they came right through Fresno, and they didn't stop, and they didn't call. And I just thought, this is not a good idea, because, you know, you'll go down there, and none of your expectations, you know, they're not going to, they were like 14 and 15 at the time, And the bottom line is they didn't want to be around me either. They were doing the same stuff that I was doing when I was their age. And the last thing that they needed was me in their life at that time. So that was a suggestion I did not yet believe in. And I can tell you by taking suggestions that I don't believe in, this is how that one worked out. It was probably 3 years ago that my youngest son came to visit for a week after in the summertime. And then the following year, he came out for 2 weeks. Okay? And then he graduated the following year, and he came out for a year. So, all I know by that is that, you know, by taking the suggestions, things seemed to normally work out the way they were supposed to work out. You know, and when he came out here for that year, you know, we were able to reestablish a relationship. Okay? And the reason we were, and I'll be honest about this, I got married about 3.5 years ago. The reason that he and I were able to reestablish a relationship is probably by some of the growth that's happened to me, but because my wife was kind of a buffer, you know, and that worked out. That worked out well. He became part of our life again. The other son, I can tell you, this about 4 months ago was the first time that he came, and he stayed for a week. And so when the book says sometimes quickly and sometimes slowly, you know, it was 6 years later that we were able to establish a relationship. But I can tell you, it wasn't in my time, but it was in the best time. And I'm really grateful for that. You know, I started going to meetings. I started doing some of the things that they asked me to do. You know, I've got a real active home group that I'm real grateful for, you know. We do 3 or 4 events a year. I can tell you this, I don't know if I can say this, but in December, we're having our 5th annual holiday soiree, you know, and Rayanne's going to be the speaker at that event, and we're real happy she's going to come up, and hopefully, you know, some other people come up too to support her as well. It's been a real great event. I can tell you, at 6 years of sobriety, what it's like today is it can be very confusing at times. You know, there seems to be this, you know, in the work I've done with my sponsor and working the steps, okay, and we just started recently and back on the steps again, and I can tell you that when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was a very, very, very sick individual. You know, when they told me, you're not a bad person trying to get well, when you're not a bad person trying to get good, but you're a sick person trying to get well, I could relate to that. You know, and I can relate to that because 28 years of drinking got me to a spot that I really wasn't I wasn't well. I wasn't sane. And I could recognize that to a certain degree. I can recognize today that I'm a lot sicker than I thought I was when I got here. And when I got here, I didn't think I was that bad. Today, I'm thinking, hey, you're pretty bad, you know. The thoughts that go through your mind are not always rational. I've learned you can do a lot of things in sobriety. You know, I came, they said get a job, I got a job, then I got a different job, then I met that woman, and we've worked together for the last 3.5 years. I can tell you, a month ago, you know, she said, you need to go do something else, okay? So I've been unemployed for the last month, okay? Which I was really upset about to begin with, because I don't know about you guys, but I like to do things on my time. Like when all the stars are aligned, you know, okay, now we can do this, okay, because everything is right. And that's not what happens. Because what happens with me is I get stuck on a lot of old ideas, okay? And the book talks about, I don't know that I've done this a whole lot, but if you're new, you know, I can tell you that this book saved my life. You know, I can tell you I read it before I got here, and I can encourage you to, if you haven't, to pick it up and to read it, you know. When I came up here, I'll go back just for a minute. When I came up here to Fresno, and I lived with my sister, her and her brother-in-law, her and my brother-in-law went out and bought a big book. But they bought the little one, the paperback one, okay? And they put it on the counter, and they said, you guys might want to read this, Robert. and I read it, and I started going to meetings, and you guys kept talking about this book, the big book, and I felt cheated, because I didn't have a big book. I had a small book, okay? It was not the same size as everybody else's, okay? It was, apparently the words are the same throughout. But I can tell you, I read the book before I got here, and I started, you know, one Sunday, and I finished the following week, you know, and going through the book and going through the, you know, I think the one part about the book that intrigued me the most, once I got through relating to Bill, he was about the same age that I was, the doctor's opinion about the disease and about the malady, the one thing that I love so much, at the end it says there's a solution. And I can tell you, I didn't have a solution for my problems in a long, long time. You know, and to see the words that there's a solution, you know you're screwed up, but there's a solution, was very inspiring to me. And so, getting back to the old ideas, you know, I'm just learning at my age of sobriety what makes me tick to a certain degree. I mean, there's no more like illusion. You know, the first couple of years, I, you know, it was, sobriety was great. It was different than what I had. You know, I got in the relationship, so, you know, I could focus on that. And then there was, you know, I can tell you about the last year and a half, you know, what the focus has been on. Why don't we keep our eyes on yourself, Robert, and why don't we see what we can do about changing you? Which is a little bit uncomfortable at times. But the old ideas, you know, I don't know where some of them come from. And so part of the whole steps for me is exploratory. The only thing I can tell you with old ideas, and this popped in my head earlier, is my great-grandmother used to cook a roast. And she always chopped off the ends. And then they would put the potatoes and the onions in the roast. And so because she did it, my great-grandmother did it. You know? And I don't remember either one of them, okay? But I do remember my grandmother doing it, you know? And I always remember on the holidays, you know, having a roast and the potatoes and the onions. And she always chopped off the ends. And then my grandmother did it, okay? And then my sister started doing it. And one day she's like, Mom, why are we chopping off the ends to the roast? This doesn't make any sense. You know, you lose all the juices. My mom's like, I don't know. I mean, my mother did it, and her mother did it, and her mother did it. So she went back to my grandmother, who was still alive at the time, and she said, hey, Mom, why are we chopping off the ends to the roast? And she said, I don't know. You know, my mother did it, and her mother did it. So they went back and explored it some more, you know. And the deal came out that my great-great-grandmother, the roasting pan was this big. Okay? So for five generations, you know, we've been doing it a certain way because the roasting pan was so small. That, to me, is an old idea. Not really knowing where the hell it came from. Okay? But I know that with some of my old ideas now, you know, they don't work. I mean, they've worked for a long time. I don't know where they came from, but they don't work any longer, you know? And so I can tell you, by coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, and you know, I don't know if... I don't know if you think that your home group is the best home group, okay? But if you don't, you should find the one that is the best for you, you know? And I don't know if you think your sponsor is the best, okay? But but I do, okay? And the reason is because, you know, the guy can twist and turn me, and he can try to push me in directions and give me suggestions to try to figure out those old ideas, you know, and to figure out if those, and since they don't still work, you know, because I remember, and I'll quote, this is about five, so you said, I remember that early on in sobriety, the guy said to me, he said, Robert, you know, what do you want? And I can remember before I could say, I don't know, he said, of course you don't. I mean, because he's always one step ahead, okay? So he says, why don't we try to start with what you don't want, okay? And I thought, well, that's an awful idea. Okay? What I don't want, okay, is I don't want to go back to that lonely desperation. I don't want to go back to that drunk on the park bench, you know, that doesn't have anywhere to go. And besides all that, I don't want to feel that loneliness that I felt before, you know. And I can tell you, by starting in the reverse direction, you know, then I can start to figure out what I want, you know. And again, thanks for asking me to come, Bill. You know, my name is Robert, and I am an alcoholic.